castlechurch.org. This is Christ the Center, Episode 4 for February 15th, 2008, Choosing a Commentary. Welcome to Christ the Center, Doctrine for Life, a panel discussion on issues in Reformed theology. I'm Camden Busey, and today I'm joined by Jeff Waddington, who is a teaching pastor at Calvary OPC in Ringgoes, New Jersey. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Camden.
And I'm also joined by Jim Cassidy, who is the pastor at Calvary OPC in Ringgoes, New Jersey. How are you doing, Jim?
All right, Camden. Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. I'm glad to have you guys on again. This is always a fun time to get together and to talk about these issues. But today we're going to be speaking about commentaries. We had a two-part discussion on building a theological library, and now we wanted to supplement that with a discussion on commentary sets and also individual commentaries so that we can understand the general principles that we need to employ when we're buying commentaries and looking through them, when we're preparing for sermons, preparing for Bible studies, so that we can get the most efficiency, the most use out of what we have. But first, I'd like to start. Do we have any errata from the previous discussions?
No.
Anything to add?
Oh, our previous discussion was perfect.
The only thing I would like to say is I had too many O's in my remark.
Well, that's fine.
We forgive you, brother.
I absolve you.
Thank you so much.
Any comments or questions in addition?
I'm trying to remember what we talked about.
It was a memorable show.
Yeah. Nothing that comes to my mind at this point.
Yeah, we just went through and marched through building a theological library, went through all the different disciplines, the theological encyclopedia.
We didn't cover secular literature, but that could be another.
I did mention a little bit. I had this book called The Lifetime Reading Plan.
Oh, that's correct. You did. You mentioned that.
And so that's a helpful thing just to encourage people. You might be able to find that at your library, or if you pick the book up, it's a small little paperback. But that just goes through kind of the important works in literature, both American, even Greek classics, poetry. It's a broad range of things.
Right.
And so that's helpful to understand the major ideas through history.
And actually the same, we had referenced the How to Read a Book, which actually has the same kind of plan.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that volume was written, I believe, in conjunction with the Encyclopedia Britannica's Great Books of the Western World.
Absolutely.
So it also has a reading plan in there as well. So we've got it covered, I guess.
Excellent. Do we have any picks of the week? I don't want to forget that. Any websites or have you been reading anything? Any new publications?
Any new publications?
Or anything we haven't mentioned. I'm going to say my pick of the week, we haven't done this, and it's a real obvious one, is Bible Works.
I love Bible Works.
Right.
Bible Works is a great software for those of you who are unfamiliar.
Can we put a little applause in during after you said that? That would be great.
For my part, I would love to have someone buy me a copy of that so that I can actually comment on it.
Okay. Well, let's appeal to the listening audience. If anyone would like to buy Jeff a copy of Bible Works,
I have the Logos Scholar.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to mention. Some people from other seminaries or other environments might have used
really,
Logos.
Bible Works really is the cream of the crop, I think.
I think, it is. Logos has, or Logos, depending on who taught you your Greek, has different. Different features, and it has a lot of things that Bible Works does not have. And I've used Logos a little bit, but Logos has this Libronix thing that's built in, and it's really cool because you can get all these other works and books and bring them in. So that's something Bible Works does not have. But Bible Works, in terms of language analysis, even things like sentence diagramming now, Bible maps they've put in there. But it's just amazing. It's a tremendous use for me in my Hebrew studies, and it's a big help for me now in the Greek. But it's just a great software program, so you can do a search, and I'll put a link in the show notes to BibleWorks.
Right, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Jeff, you've got anything? Anything you want to promote this week?
I was trying to think of new something new. But I think I would almost recommend that the people check the following website. I had already mentioned, I think, visiting a publisher website, but also the Westminster Bookstore website, the Solid Ground Christian Books website, Banner of Truth, all of those. That's the best way. If you only want one website, I suppose the WTS Books is the way to go.
Yeah.
Because they will do all of the work, the very kinds of things that we talked about in the last two, or even today, of episodes.
Right.
They do. Having been an employee of the Westminster Bookstore, I can tell you that the guys and gals there will do the hunting down of books. And if you come across something they don't have, they may add that to their inventory as well. So, if you only have one place you can go, that would be the place I would recommend.
Yeah. They've really changed in the last, what, 5, 6, 7 years. It's just a top-notch bookstore. I'm actually very impressed. If you do a search for campus bookstore, I think it's one of the top 2 or 3 in Google. It's amazing. Yeah,
it's taken off, especially the internet part side of it has really taken off like gangbusters.
Yeah. That's a tremendous blessing. And so yeah, I encourage you to go to visit that site as well. Jim, you have anything?
Recently, I've been looking at a small little volume by John Piper on endurance. And it's in a series called The Swans Are Not Silent. And in this particular volume, he's talking about John Newton, Wilberforce, Simeon. And it's not heavy-duty scholarship or anything, but it's a nice, little biography along with a word of encouragement type of nighttime reading, I found it to be very helpful and just an enjoyable read if you're looking for something a little bit less intense.
And he's written on Machen too. He has another volume that includes Machen and some others. I think John Owen might be in that one.
Yes. Yeah. He's done a lot in terms of Christian biography.
He does. I know every year he has a biography. I think it's at their national conference, if I'm not mistaken.
The pastor's conference.
And he will present quite an in-depth biography. He gives a lecture on the guy or woman. I don't know if he's done any women, but then he eventually turns those into these books, and they're really helpful, especially for people who aren't familiar with a lot of church history, to be able to get in and read about some of the big figures in Christianity. It's really helpful.
I guess a couple of books that we may not have mentioned, or one book, is Carl Trimmon's biography of John Owen, seeing as we mentioned his name.
Mm.
John Owen, Reformed Catholic.
And that I believe the pages are gold, this book. I mean, at least is how much it costs, right?
No, gold foil. The paperback edition is not too bad. It's the hardback that is, the pages are gold and the cover is platinum. I think it's like $100 for the hardback.
I think I figured it out at one point because I was surprised. I did buy the paperback, but the hardback I think comes out to about 76 cents per page. So
it's an academic publisher, and they tend to be much more expensive.
It just happens, but it's a great book. I mean, especially if you're interested in John Owen, it's something you're going to need to pick up and read at some point in time.
And a companion volume, seeing as we're on the subject, what's the book by Kelly Capick that deals with Owen? Divine Human, forget the title of the book. The Communion with God. Communion with God, the Divine and the Human in the Theology of John Owen.
Excellent.
Yeah, that is a wonderful discussion of all between that and Carl Truman's book. Those are phenomenal. And of course, reading Owen himself is worth doing.
Yeah.
So those are relatively new. And I would recommend those to the interested reader.
Excellent. Well, today we're going to be talking about commentary sets, though. What are some general principles here in terms of commentaries? There's so many out there. How do I know what to go by? How do I know what to put into my library?
I think that a couple of things should be said up front, and this is simply my opinion. This is not gospel truth by any stretch of the imagination. But I am inclined, with the exception of two or three items that I'll mention, that a pastor not spend a great deal of money up front on an entire commentary set. Whether it's the Word Commentary, the New International Commentary, the New Testament, whatever, because a lot of these sets that are out there can be very much hit or miss. They can have excellent volumes, and then there could be really poor ones. And if you spend all your money up front on an entire set, it could be very difficult to actually get your money worth out of it. Now, the exception to that, I would say, is building before you go into pastoral ministry, have what I would call, or what actually Tremper Longman in his commentary survey book calls, a spine to your commentary collection. And I think that if you want to have a good solid spine for the whole Bible, I think you got to have Calvin's commentaries. It doesn't cover every book of the Bible, but it is, of course, extremely dated, but theologically it's solid. To have that as sort of the backbone of your commentary library. And then you would want to have something in the Old Testament. If you want to go with Keel and Dillich as your sort of Old Testament spine, that's what I've done. There may be others that you guys would recommend. And then going into the New Testament, I don't think you could do any better than Kistemacher for your New Testament spine. And then from there, what I would suggest is, as you begin to approach certain books of the Bible to preach through them, go ahead and pick up your individual commentaries that you get good recommendations from other, you know, professors, pastors, from the commentary survey books, whatever the case may be, and then start filling in one book at a time, your commentary collection. That's my suggestion, but I leave it to you guys to fill in certain.
Well, what I was going to suggest was that up front we mentioned, as you already have actually, Tremper Longman's Old Testament commentary survey, and D.A. Carson has a companion volume of New Testament commentary survey. Both of those are in their third or fourth editions, or they've been updated over the years to keep up with the massive output of commentaries that seem to be flooding the market all the time.
I think it would be a good time to pick those up because they just were revised fairly recently, so it might be early in the cycle. They're smaller books, but they're really useful, very helpful in annotating a little bit about what each commentary is about and what they focus on, because you're going to find a broad range, right? There are commentaries designed more for Bible study and more for the layperson. There are others that do a lot of language, linguistic analysis. So those books are really helpful in just telling you what's in the commentary.
Right. Now, I thought it was, and you may know about this, either one of you, is it TEDS, the Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, that produces annually a commentary review? Anybody remember? That sound familiar?
It doesn't sound familiar to me, although that's
possible. Dallas Seminary, one of the evangelical seminaries, or maybe it's one of the publishers. When I was the book buyer at the Westminster Seminary bookstore, we used to stock this. It was thicker than a typical magazine, but once a year, the faculty or staff of whatever organization produced this would do something along the lines of what Carson and Longman had done, except that it was done annually. So you were pretty good, guaranteed that the thing would be up to date.
That's helpful.
So it's a good resource. Of course, the last 2 weeks, we recommended The Way You Find Good Books. It's the same procedure. You pay attention to reviews and comments and bibliographies and footnotes to see what I remember years ago reading lots of things on the Book of Romans, and Murray, his commentary on Romans, and Cranfield's commentary on Romans kept popping up. And it finally dawned on me that maybe those were two commentaries that I ought to have in my library. So so there are resources out there to help someone building their commentary library. But Jim is correct. You want to start out with a couple of basic sets, because we wouldn't normally recommend buying a whole set. As Jim said, there are weak links in the chain. And one of the things I think our professors at Westminster said was, don't buy a whole set. They might have, made an exception for Calvin or Kylan Delitzsch or the Tyndale paperback set, which covers both the Old Testament and the New,
right,
so that a pastor starting out would have at least a very basic commentary for each book of the Bible, and then from that there go out and get the best commentaries available. I know, for instance, that Lane Keister, whose name we mentioned last 2 weeks, and his site on Green Baggins does have a couple of blog entries on what he considers to be the best commentary. I know that John Piper at Desiring God Ministries has also done the same thing.
There's also a nice resource on the Northwest Theological Seminary website where you can download, or it might be part of the webpage now, I'm not sure, but they have a commentary survey that is also very helpful to consult.
So we have those resources at our fingertips, or a pastor with a good computer can get at them without too much trouble.
Absolutely.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And all these will be, helpful and to have at your fingertips, at your disposal. I have Carson and Longman have been at my fingertips throughout my short ministry thus far, and they've been very helpful in terms of trying to discern what the Bible. Because if you're going to preaching the Gospel of John, you have a choice of about 30 or 40 commentaries that you can buy and put on your shelf. Most pastors can afford to do that. Most pastors don't have the time to read 30 or 40 commentaries on any given passage. So it's helpful because Carson and Longman are coming from basically, conservative evangelical perspective, and they're going to tell you which ones are the real liberal critical commentaries that may not have great deal of value to them, and then they're going to tell you the ones that are coming more from the perspective that you may be coming from as a Reformed or evangelical pastor, and that'll help you to start trimming the list of commentaries to buy.
Right.
So what's your general procedure if you're preaching through a book expositionally? As you mentioned, there's so many. I mean, how many do you typically use when you're preparing a sermon?
Yeah, that's a good
question. Do you typically go to a couple favorites that are very useful for your style of preaching, or do you read so broadly? I mean, I can see a balance where you don't want to only read one, and you don't want to read 30.
Right.
So where's the sweet spot?
What I've done is I have consulted my commentary surveys. I've narrowed it down to about 5 or 6 volumes.
Okay.
That would be helpful. And I go out, I purchase those 5 or 6 volumes, get them on my desk. I usually read all of the introductions of those 5 commentaries. And then I begin to whittle it down as I go through week by week preparing sermons. I find that there are certain of the 5 or 6 commentaries that are my favorite, and then I'll generally go to them first, and then if they have helped me enough where I feel like I have a good grasp of the text, I find as I preach through a book that I consult some of the other ones less and less and less, especially as time crunches come up and you don't have time to consult all 5 or 6. And then I do end up by the time I'm done with the book, I have a favorite two or three commentaries that are my go-to guys. And then I'll consult the other ones if I'm really having a hard time. You will find that is something that will happen. You're gonna buy, you know, between 3 to 6 commentaries, and then you'll whittle down your favorites by the time you get through with the series.
Excellent. Now, Jeff, you've mentioned to me before that you enjoy using commentaries for devotional reading. You want to explain?
I do. Years ago, when I was Wesleyan, this advice given me by the former president of Asbury College, it's still good advice, even though it comes from Wesleyan. He had suggested as a general principle to be reading in 7 areas, consistently for the pastor or minister. And of course there would be one commentary on the Old Testament and one commentary on the New Testament. And what he meant was that those 7 areas would be read every day. I mean, he didn't mean, you know, become legalistic about it. He just said, if you have a good reading program, you're going to be reading in these areas consistently. So that you can be reading commentaries, as I do, as part of my devotions, that are not related to sermon prep. I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah, I do too.
For building up your spiritual life. In fact, the commentary I'm reading now is part of the Reformed Expository Commentary series, which is that new series put out by E&R.
Excellent.
Presbyterian and Reformed Publishers.
Right.
It's an excellent. At this point, I think I can recommend all of the volumes. And what I know of what's planned in the future, I would also say I could recommend them as long as they keep up the quality that we've seen so far. They're very good. The volume I'm reading now is on Zechariah, and it's by Rick Phillips, who's a PCA pastor down in Greenville, right? South Carolina, I think it's Second Presbyterian Church.
It's somewhere down there, yeah.
Yeah, he and I took some classes together at Westminster way back when, and he is a fine preacher and a fine commentator. Now, those are not, they're kind of a mid-range commentary.
Yeah, not high scholarship or...
Well, the footnotes provide that. But the actual text itself is very preachable.
Yeah.
But they're a very good balance, and so they're very good for my devotions. Although I've read for my devotions technical commentaries, anyway, so that's a good set. And that's I've been doing that now, reading commentaries as part of my personal worship probably for almost 20-some years.
Oh, my.
Just making it a regular, you know, with... Depending on the commentaries, I'm trying to remember. I've read through Murray on Romans way back when. So, I mean, it's a good practice.
Absolutely.
I would recommend it. And again, not as part of your sermon prep, but just as part of your walk with the Lord. And so that's a good practice.
Just out of curiosity, what were the other areas he suggested you should be reading in?
Church history, systematic theology, biography, secular stuff as well, of course. Let's see, so there's Old Testament and New Testament commentary, systematic theology. There's almost the theological encyclopedia.
Sure.
Plus reading current events, secular history, and if you have an interest in an area that's not covered in the other 6 categories. And he just said, you know, have those books lined up on your little, wherever you put your personal reading, which for me is generally, apart from my devotions, is my nighttime reading at this point in my life.
So other than the main commentary sets we mentioned, the Kyle and Delitzsch, which, by the way, I picked up used yesterday for $10.
Believe that? That's a good deal.
It's an older printing, but still. I'm ecstatic. And then the Calvin set, obviously.
And you can get it cheap now these days. It's like, you look out for sales, you can get it on sale for $99.
Exactly, if you're keeping your eye open. And that's typically at CBD. You go to either that or ChristianBook.com. They're the same company.
There are different versions of Calvin's commentary.
Now, What are the differences between those?
I believe the ones I've got two volumes right now, right in front of me. One's the Baker, and that includes the Old and the New Testament. And then there's the set that's just the New Testament by Erdmann.
Okay.
I believe they're different translations, but I haven't looked into it closely enough to verify that. And then, of course, there are his sermons as well, which would be useful. Calvin's sermons.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There are several volumes. In fact, just in the last couple of weeks, Banner of Truth has published a volume on Calvin's sermons from Acts chapters 1 through 7, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. And for those of stout wallet, you could also consider the commentaries that have been written by Martin Luther as well. There is a great deal of value in those. If you're coming from a Reformed perspective, you're going to realize that you're going to get some, well, Lutheranism in there. But his insights can be very penetrating, and the set of Luther's works is not cheap. It is an expensive investment, but one also to look into.
Are you thinking, Jim, of those that are part of the Luther Works edition?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah,
that's right. I mean, that set, you can get it on CD, of course, as well.
Oh, there you go.
I was going to say, it's just, I hate it when things come in and go right out of my mind. But what would be? We should talk about this, because I guess before we move any further. But what would be the criteria for determining a good commentary from a bad one?
That's a good question.
Before you answer that, I just remembered what I don't mean to interrupt, but I just remembered. It is a good idea, a general practice, to read old and new commentaries, not to get stuck on one or the other.
Sure.
Yeah, that's right.
Suggest not to only read things you agree with.
That would also, and that's why when Jim says read Martin Luther, our differences would not be, it's not like a critical commentary in the negative sense of critical, but theologically there will be some differences that we as Reformed folk have with Luther, but although not as much as we have with Lutheranism.
That's right. Yeah.
But you would want to read, if you want to read the Reformers, you want to read the post-Reformation commentaries, which I wish were there was more of them translated. Maybe that's a job for the future.
Yes.
The Church Fathers, it really would be good to be familiar with the history of biblical interpretation and exegesis. And one thing that is, and that brings to mind the two commentary sets. The one is the Ancient Christian Commentary Set, edited by Thomas Oden. That's an InterVarsity publication. That's available also on CD-ROM now. I don't think it's complete as of this point. There is a similar set that has just begun by Erdmann's, but that's edited by more liberal-leaning scholars. Is that called the Church's Bible, I think? And then there's a set slated within the next couple years that's similar to the Ancient Christian Commentary on the Reformation. Reformer, the commentary produced by various reformers. I have it on good authority that Carl Truman will be editing the volume on Romans.
Oh, wow.
Excellent. Yeah, excellent. Yeah, that's just to go back to the earlier question, and we've kind of touched on it even already, is when you're looking at commentaries, you're going to want to look and have on your desk those commentaries that you absolutely trust, your go-to guys, the ones that you know for being solidly Reformed, solidly biblical and conservative, and you're going to want those as your anchor. But it is helpful to also look at some of the more critical commentaries, particularly the ones that get into the language and the Greek text or the Hebrew text in an in-depth fashion, and have those under your belt. Know what they're saying, because sometimes there are good insights to be found there. But yeah, you do want to have your anchor as your go-to comeback to, so that you don't find yourself preaching liberalism from the pulpit or whatever the case may be.
I'll give you an example of a critical commentary that I found actually helpful and interesting was Ernst Henschen, who is a German commentator, wrote a commentary back, I guess it came out in English in the late 70s, on the book of Acts. And he has an absolutely wonderful section on Acts 17 and regarding Paul's speech before the Areopagus. A wonderfully insightful and profound discussion, and then, of course, he has to finish it off by saying, of course, this is all the invention of Dr. Luke, which he puts in quotation mark.
Oh, my.
So, I mean, that's the kind of thing you have to deal with, but that's a commentary that would be worth people having on their bookshelves. You have to read it with discernment. Well, which is what you have to do with all books, apart from God's Word, although even there you have to read with discernment, being guided by the Spirit.
That's right, yeah. Of course, and it might do us well as we're heading in this direction to talk about and recommend perhaps some commentaries on major books of the Bible that new pastors may be looking to preach on. And when we talk about that, especially as we're thinking about those outside of our tradition that are helpful commentaries, I think of the Anchor Bible Commentaries, have a couple of very nice volumes. One, of course, is now a bit dated. Raymond Brown's commentary on John is a must consult. His insights, a Roman Catholic commentator, but his insights are penetrating. I don't always agree with him, but his insights are penetrating. And also Fitzmyer, he has a couple of commentaries. One on Acts, one on Luke, and then another one on Romans in that series, all of which have very helpful insights.
Fitzmyer is a unique person that even though he's a Roman Catholic, there are times where he agrees with Protestant exegesis, which makes for interesting reading.
Yes, it does. It does make for interesting reading and for some very helpful insights. Some others that are outside of our tradition, which are, I think, ones that are helpful to consult in the Book of Romans, you had mentioned already, Jeff, Cranfield's commentary, is one that I think has to be read with. I think your go-to commentary, however, for the Book of Romans would be somebody like John Murray. I can't find one better than John Murray out there anymore. Even Doug Moo's commentary, which is very good, I still think that John Murray has some things right over Doug Moo.
Yes, I agree. If you're wanting to get some insight from the Wesleyan perspective, a guy by the name of Ben Witherington has a whole series of commentaries that have some usefulness. And of course, you may be familiar with his name because he is often consulted by the news media whenever there's some sort of in the media about the historical Jesus. He will often represent the conservative evangelical side of the debate. And he has too many commentaries to list, and he's coming out with more in the near future. He teaches at Asbury Theological Seminary. There's also Daryl Bach, who is at Dallas Theological Seminary, who has written, done commentaries on Luke, a two-volume in the Baker Exegetical Commentary Series, and then a volume that just recently came out on the Book of Acts. That's his area specifically of his area of expertise. Again, he's a progressive dispensationalist, so there will be areas of disagreement, but he's definitely worth reading.
Yeah, yeah. And in terms of another book that pastors may be looking to preach through is the Gospel of John, one that I'm currently preaching through at this point. Some of the volumes that have been helpful for me in that series has been Leon Morris's commentary. He has actually a technical commentary and then a popular commentary, both of which are helpful to consult, the one on the technical level, the other one to help you in terms of homiletics. The other ones would be D.A. Carson is second to none. His commentary is he's one of those guys that when it got whittled down, he was my constant, consistent go-to guy for John. Always good. And Herman Ritterbos's theological commentary, published by Erdman's, is another one that is very helpful to get some perspective on the redemptive historical nature of what John is doing in as he writes his gospel.
That's a good point, because there are different types of commentaries, and that being a theological commentary. And sometimes you find commentaries on the Greek New Testament. There's a great set. And so those are commenting on very different things. But
some Greek commentaries, especially that come from the 19th century, can tend to be rather dry because they're dealing purely with grammatical or syntactical issues of the Greek or the Hebrew. There was no care, it seems, there was no care for the message itself. The newer commentaries, like the New International Greek Testament commentary, are sensitive to the theological thrust of the books that are being commented upon, while also being concerned with the rigorous exegesis of the original Greek text.
Exactly.
Seeing as I've mentioned that set, the volume in that set, in my opinion, that is the most profound, is also, I think, the biggest one, or one of the bigger ones, and that is Greg Beale's commentary on the Book of Revelation. Absolutely thorough. I don't think it leaves any stone unturned in its discussion of that book.
No, the Beale volume is great. And he's coming from a non-millennial perspective, if I'm correct, right?
That is correct.
That's correct.
And
yeah.
So sometimes those are harder to come by. I mean, you can find that in the Simon Kistemaker and William Hendrickson set, but outside of
I would recommend if a person, you know, whether it's a pastor or a layperson, three commentaries that come from the amillennial perspective, I can grade them according to beginner, intermediate, and advanced, would be on Revelation, would be Vern Poitras's book, The Returning King. I would say that's a good introductory level book. Entry into the examination of the Book of Revelation. And then there is Dennis Johnson's Triumph of the Lamb, which is a good intermediate commentary. And then Beale's commentary would be at the advanced end. So if you were looking for three commentaries that would, you know, cover the range of needs, I think those three have Revelation covered pretty well.
Yeah. And what about in terms of the book of Genesis? What are some of the volumes? I mean, obviously it's a foundational book that young pastors are going to be preaching through. What are some of the helpful volumes that are there for Genesis? I guess
well,
I'm setting up.
No, there's Bruce Waltke's commentary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Genesis.
Yeah, it's short, concise, helpful volume. I'm also thinking of Gordon Wenham's two-volume set. I believe that's in the Word Commentary series.
Yes, correct.
That's it's coming from a conservative evangelical perspective that is, I think, helpful in many ways. Also a couple of volumes that have come out recently, one by John Fesco on the first three chapters of the Book of Genesis.
Correct.
Called The Last Things First. It's a particularly biblical, theological, Christological interpretation of the first three chapters of Genesis. Also, a new helpful volume has some problems in my opinion, but pretty good overall, is Grandanus's new volume on Preaching Through the Book of Genesis, which is both commentary and it's both commentary and a homiletical type of volume.
Yeah, Preaching Christ from the from Genesis.
That's right.
The title. I guess, Jim, would you include Kingdom Prologue by Meredith Klein in there as somewhat useful?
Yeah, not so much a commentary on the book of Genesis, but definitely foundational for understanding how to preach Genesis in a biblical theological fashion. That's Meredith Klein's Kingdom Prologue, now published by Wittenstock.
Right. I guess we didn't do it yet. But some of the what I would be looking for in a commentary, as a rule, I personally want to go with commentaries that deal with the original languages.
Yes.
With the exception, of course, of expositional commentaries, which are based upon sermons, then it's a different ballgame. But a commentary that's based upon the original languages, that provides or that explains various alternative explanations and then offers a cogent argument for the perspective of the given commentator.
Right.
So a good commentary will show a knowledge or indicate a knowledge of various viewpoints and then give a reason for why a given commentator has gone the way he has.
Excellent.
Yep, helpful suggestion to look for. What about Book of Psalms? It's another book that many pastors may be looking towards to preach through, as it's takes up a great deal of the Old Testament. Are there any helpful suggestions that we might have for guys in terms of what they can get for Psalms?
The Psalms, it's... Who did the volumes in the Word Biblical Commentary?
There are several authors. Craigie did the first volume, I believe, verses chapters 1 through 50.
Oh, that's right. It's multiple authors, right?
Yeah, and that's a very helpful volume. Recently published by Baker's, I believe it's Golden Gaze, Commentary on the Psalms.
Yes, it's up to... I think Volume 2 is slated for release any day now if it hasn't already come out.
Yeah, very, very recent, up-to-date volume. I haven't explored it, so I can't say, good, bad, or otherwise.
Oh, yeah, it is out. It's already available. That's part of the Baker Commentary on the Old Testament Wisdom and Psalms. So that's a specifically targeted commentary set edited by Tremper Longman.
But yeah, Psalms, and some helpful volumes in that set.
The Psalms is by John Goldingay, who's at, I believe it's Fuller Seminary. For an expositional commentary, you have James Boyce. Or if you're looking for a commentary, old commentaries, there probably wouldn't be much better than St. Augustine. His exposition of the Psalms is available in both hardback and paperback as part of a new series of the translation of the works of Augustine for the 21st century title. And you can get those, I think they have them at the Westminster Bookstore. There is also the Tyndale volume by Derek Kidner.
Yeah, helpful.
Those are brief, but again, they would provide a backbone to start with. There is also the Expositor's Bible Commentary, edited by Frank Gebelein, that's being updated, I believe, with new commentaries. I don't know where they are in that process of updating, but. Those are something to think about.
And if I could also make a plug for Mays's commentary in the interpretation series, published by John Knox, I believe it is. he's got a nice commentary on the Psalms. It's manageable. It's in one volume, but it's really good. And then he has a compendium volume that he wrote. It's a theology of the Psalms, and I believe it's called Our God Reigns. And both of those books together have proved to be a very useful resource for understanding the theology of the Psalms.
Yeah, some of these commentators have produced companion monographs that are helpful, that deal with some detail of the text in more exhaustive fashion than they can do in a commentary on the whole book. Somebody's dog is unhappy.
Yeah, that's that's Warfield, the dog.
Oh, Warfield! I thought that was he was the lion of Princeton.
Or the pit bull, one or the other.
The pit bull of Princeton.
Right. Well, Warfield had a big bushy beard, and I've got a little terrier with a very similar beard. So,
just really name your dog Warfield.
Yeah.
let's talk about Isaiah. Any recommendations on for that pivotal book of the Old Testament?
Yeah, it is pivotal, and I think that you have to have E.J. Young's three-volume series on your shelf. It's you can get that cheap through CBD.
And I would recommend also, even though he's a Wesleyan, John Oswalt's two-volume Nicott set on Isaiah as well. It's a very good treatment of the book. Also, J. Alec Motier's commentary, that's an InterVarsity commentary, is very solid. I'm not familiar with Reverend Childs on that. Are you, Jim?
I'm not. I've not preached through Isaiah, so my knowledge of what's out there is somewhat limited.
Okay, so those I've used the ones that I've mentioned. There's also the Church's Bible, as I mentioned earlier, does have a volume edited by Robert Wilkin on the Book of Isaiah. And again, like the Ancient Christian Commentary, which also has volumes out, they're taking passages of commentaries by early church fathers and listing the, and putting them, plugging them in. It can be a little irritating if you're wanting the context of a given remark, but it does at least give you an idea of where in the original sources of the early church fathers you can hunt down the context. So in that sense, I guess it's helpful. Either volume is helpful.
That's right. Right.
Any other particular commentaries, Jim? I know. Yeah. Preaching the Word series.
Edited by Kent Hughes, right?
That's correct. There is a phenomenal, in my opinion, a phenomenal volume in that series by Ian Duguid on the Book of Numbers.
Very good.
Which is, again, a redemptive historical. If you thought, and most of us have at one time or another, that Numbers was a tough book to plow through, this commentary will bring it to life, and you'll want to go back to that book repeatedly.
Yeah.
And I would plug his other commentaries. I believe he's done one on Ezekiel. He's contributed a volume on Esther and Ruth to the Reformed Expository Commentary. I believe he's also going to be contributing future volumes. He's also contributed to that... I think it's the Welwyn commentary series. So generally speaking, he is worth reading. But that Numbers commentary, in my opinion, is worth its weight in gold.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. What about, as we're just wrapping up here, thinking in terms of how about a... theology of Paul that might be helpful for preaching through, you know, major, you know, Galatians, Romans, but also all of Paul's corpus. That's I have found myself Gerhardus Voss's the Pauline eschatology as being a go-to source on my desk, where if I'm preaching through Paul, there's a helpful index in the back. Look up what, you know, that passage is. Yeah. You know, go to just see Voss's insights on that. Another helpful volume, of course, is Ritterboss's Theology of Paul. Another one to have, I think, on the desk to look up passages just to see, you know, how he treats them, particularly with both of those men and their redemptive historical insights, I think are something always worth consulting.
Absolutely. And giving the big picture, right, that behind each of the letters that Paul wrote.
That's right. Also, you know, we've mentioned this a couple of actually our first show concerning when we're talking about the Old Testament, New Testament's use of the Old Testament. I just want to mention again the one volume Carson and Beale commentary of the New Testament's use of the Old. Another help volume to have on your shelf to consult as a commentary, specifically focused on the issue of how is John using this Old Testament passage, how is Matthew using it, etc.
That reminds me, a set that is not commentaries per se is the New Studies in Biblical Theology series that is now being published by InterVarsity, edited by D.A. Carson.
Really?
Has some very good volumes that deal with, well, it's a biblical theological series dealing with various themes in the Bible. Give you an example, Greg Beale again has a book called The Temple and the Church's Mission, which tracks out the from the Garden of Eden all the way to the Book of Revelation, the development of the theme of the Garden of Eden as a temple, and then through the tabernacle and the temple in Jerusalem all the way to the New Jerusalem in the Book of Revelation. It's a phenomenal book.
That's good. Just as I'm looking here, I'm on the Northwest Theological Seminary website, and I'm now finally catching up with our conversation about the Psalms. I apologize and retroactively here, but I think that Spurgeon is still worth looking up and consulting his Treasury of David. I'm sorry?
The Treasury of David.
Yeah, the Treasury of David. It's still worth looking up because he's going to give you some of the best insights from the Puritans. And, you know, I still believe the Puritans had a great deal of to offer and still does. So I think the Puritans are always worth consulting.
Oh, yes. Banner of Truth has many of those, right?
That's right.
Commentaries. Also, the old Princeton folk.
That's right.
Provide some very in that same the same series that Banner of Truth published. I don't know if it's some is it really a series or they just have the same kind of cover. But Banner of Truth has kept in publication commentaries by the great Puritans and by later, I guess, Scotch Presbyterian and American and British English Presbyterian preachers and scholars. You know, Calvin,
E.J. Young's in that series. You have Hodges in that series, and but also with reference to the Psalms is another helpful resource, not a commentary per se, or a theology of the Psalter, is Voss's The Eschatology of the Psalter, which is an appendix to his Pauline Eschatology. Right. I think that reading that article, it's a lengthy article, but I think that it's essential to orient you to understanding the theology of the Psalter. And I can't recommend that enough. I've had to read that one two or three times to really get at what he's trying to say, but I think it's an important, monumental even, treatment of the Psalter.
Right.
Oh, wow. So that's just in the back of the Pauline Eschatology.
That's right. It's an appendix to the Pauline Eschatology.
All right.
Which is that published by PNR at this point?
I think it is in paperback. Correct. But you might be able to find a better copy somewhere, an older one.
I would throw in, before we wrap up, just a reference to the book of Hebrews. And Philip Edge computed his commentary on Hebrews. And also, dare I say it, John Owen's 7 volumes on Hebrews.
Mm-hmm. Say it.
are worth reading. Owen is exhaustive is the word, right? But Hughes is it's about 30 years old, Hughes's volume. Rick Phillips has a volume in the Reformed Expositor's Commentary on Hebrews, which is also very good. That's the book of the Bible that you really want good commentary, like Romans, right? It's a book that you want solid commentaries on.
Right.
And of course, if you want a one volume commentary on the Old Testament, the book of Hebrews itself would serve capacity. And with reference to Hebrews, you also want to consult Voss's The Teaching of the Book of Hebrews.
Yeah, that's a pretty short book for Voss, isn't it? But very, very compelling as well.
Yeah, helpful.
And that's the Wiffenstock title, I believe.
It is, I believe, still published by Wiffenstock. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Well, those books will definitely get you going, and those volumes by Voss and Ritterboss as well are going to get you more of a framework for understanding the others. So would you suggest reading Voss and Ritterboss and the Theology of Paul perhaps before actually reading specific commentaries on Galatians or Ephesians?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You want to have that as your foundation stone. Ritterboss under your belt, Voss under your belt, because those guys will orient you basically to how to read Paul. Mm. And those will help you in that, because it's absolutely essential to understand the redemptive historical structure, the eschatological nature of Paul's theology, so that when you go in and start reading Paul and you start working with the other commentaries, everything can be kind of understood within that framework.
It also probably suggests if you're preaching through, I don't know, Genesis 12 through 18, you know, a section on Abraham, that you might also look into commentaries on Hebrews. Yes. At the same time, even though you might not be going to Hebrews, just to get the background and to see the big picture redemptive historically.
In the book of Hebrews, of course, you have a divine commentary.
Exactly.
On the Abraham. Well, and you do also in Romans and Galatians, right?
Right. That's right. And James.
And James. And James, that's right. So you've got, when the New Testament makes some statement about the Abraham, we had better pay attention if we're going to be preaching a Christian sermon.
Exactly. And so it's important to see the big picture, I guess, is what we're saying, and to get the right books for that, whether it's the Beale and Carson commentary on the New Testament use of the Old, or commentaries on related books that the Bible itself comments on. And so it's kind of a manifold process, I guess, that we need to be aware of the fact when we're preparing sermons
When we're preaching on the Old Testament, we don't want to be saying something that's contradicted
by
God's Word itself, right?
And a good commentary is going to bring those in. I mean, if you're preaching or reading a commentary on Genesis, a good one's going to be talking about whatever Hebrews might say about it, but still, it's good to have the bigger framework.
That's correct.
So it's about time to conclude today's discussion. We want to thank you for listening. I'd like to thank our panel members, Jeff Waddington and Jim Cassidy. Thanks, guys, for coming on again.
You're welcome.
Yeah, well, we'll be back next week discussing another topic. But until then, you can visit castlechurch.org to read the show notes. You can even download today's bibliography in case you forgot or missed a book or two. I hope I didn't miss a book or two. I got a big fat list here to type in. But you can also find more information about our other programs. You can even subscribe to our podcast feeds and get this program and our other programs, such as the Westminster Confession, the Shorter and Larger Catechisms, downloaded automatically to your computer. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can send your questions or comments to christthecenter@castlechurch.org, or you can call 215-392-0946 to leave a voicemail. So again, this is Camden Busey, and we look forward to having you back next time on Christ the Center.